We welcome Joe Rhodes to the program now. As I mentioned, he's a self-employed Macintosh support specialist, resides here in Madison. He's been supporting Macintosh computers professionally since 1999 and unprofessionally, I guess you could say, for a lot longer, several years before that, actually. So he knows a lot about Macintosh computers and all that goes with them. And if you have a question or a comment for him, we'd love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Joe Rhodes, welcome. Nice to have you with us.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
I was thinking, somebody said to me, actually, we were talking about Macintosh computers, and I have a Mac, and never have any problems with it. And the guy was saying, well, he must be like the Maytag repair salesman from the old from the old commercials, that nothing ever goes wrong, but things do go wrong.
Well, they do. Computers are built by human beings, and they're not perfect yet. Neither are we, for that matter. So they work most of the time, and when they work great. But when they don't work, boy, they can be really frustrating.
Yeah.
But usually they're pretty easy to get back up and running and doing what you want. And sometimes it's just a matter of knowing what the computer is doing. It's not necessarily that it's broken. You just don't understand what's going on.
Yeah. What's the typical, or is there a typical problem that you deal with?
Well, you know, I deal with a lot of bizarre problems, because most of the typical problems Macintosh users, we kind of figure out on our own. I mean, it's the machines are built for us to understand. So usually when you hit a problem that you don't understand, it's pretty bizarre. There are a couple problems that seem to crop up more often than not. And if you want, I can go over real quick, you know, what I find, I'd say the majority of the problems turn out to be. With Mac OS X, the system does this thing called caching, where it'll read, say, your fonts. It'll read your fonts off the disk, and it'll digest them, and it'll store them on the disk in a manner that's really efficient for the computer to use. And it makes things really fast. It makes your computer start up faster, makes programs launch faster. Really handy thing to happen, to have happen. But every once in a while, these caches get a little weird, for lack of a better term. And then you start noticing things like, oh, an application will display something really bizarre that you never saw before, or your fonts look all funny, or print jobs don't go out the way they should, something got replaced. And the nice thing is these caches are completely expendable. So you can go on your Macintosh, you can throw them away, and the next time you restart your computer, it'll restart kind of slower because it's got to rebuild them all, but it'll rebuild all the caches and you're good to go. And that'll solve, you know, that I would say that solves a bunch of problems. I'm not going to say all or even most, but it certainly solves a bunch.
Now, where do you go to turn those off?
Well, there's a couple of places where they live on your computer. If you click on your hard drive, if you just click right at the hard drive, you'll see a couple of folders like applications, library, system, users. If you go into that library folder, that is a place where the computer keeps all kinds of details that it needs to run.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look, you'll see a folder called caches, and you'll see a whole bunch of stuff that's labeled almost in Greek. But like I said, everything inside of that caches folder, throw it all in the trash. Now, because it belongs to the computer and not specifically to you, your computer will probably ask you for your password just to confirm that, yes, I really wanted to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And once you throw that stuff away, you should probably restart your computer because it's expecting stuff to be in that cache and now it's not there. So restart it so it can get them all rebuilt. Now, there's a second place where stuff gets cached, and this is in your home folder. Apple decided with Mac OS X that they were going to have a place specifically for you that's separate from someone else and separate from all the computer stuff. It's really focused on your things. And that's called your home folder. And when you double-click on your hard drive, you'll usually see off on the left-hand side, you'll see a column, and there's usually a little picture of a house there.
Mm-hmm.
And when you click on that, that takes you to your home folder. In your home folder, you'll know you're there because you'll see some folders that, one's called desktop. You'll see another folder called library. You usually see a folder called pictures and movies and music, and that's how you know you're in your home folder. Again, you go into that library folder, and you'll see something that looks very similar to what you just got done doing. There's another caches folder. And you go in there, and you'll see all kinds of stuff in there. You just take all the stuff in that caches folder, throw it away. And again, your best bet is to restart your computers just so it can build all those back up. And it'll take a little bit longer the first time you launch an application. Say you launch iCal, or you launch your mail program, or you launch Safari. You just got rid of all the stuff that it had built up to kind of speed itself along. So it'll have to rebuild that. So the first time you start using things, it'll seem a little groggy compared to usual. But it picks that up really quick, and you're back up and running.
Well, all our lines are filled, so let's go to the phones here and see what's up. Mike in Castle Rock, your turn. Hi, Mike. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I've got an older Macintosh with 9.2 running software in it, and I'd like to get rid of the cookies, which I can do manually, but I can only do it one at a time, and I was wondering if there was some way you could do that globally.
Well, actually, there is. Well, let me ask you, what web browser are you using?
Let's see. Well, it's Windows 95 or 94. I don't remember. And it's all Microsoft driven.
Okay. So are you using a computer that's Windows 95? Or are you,
right.
You said you had a Mac there.
Yes. It's probably 95.
Okay. Now, is that the computer you're trying to get rid of the cookies on, or is it on the Mac?
Well, it's on a Macintosh.
Okay, because so you're running Windows on your Macintosh? On
no,
your older Macintosh?
I think I've confused it. I think that I was just looking at it a while ago, and it said something like, well, it's a Macintosh version of Microsoft Word is what it is.
Was it something like Microsoft Internet Explorer by any chance?
Right, that's it.
There it is. Okay. Well, let's test my memory. I haven't used a Mac OS 9 machine for a while, but I think I remember how this works. On your Mac hard drive with Mac OS 9, you should see a folder that's called System Folder.
Right.
And if you go in there, you should see a folder called Preferences.
Right.
And if you go inside of the Preferences folder, you should see a folder called Internet Explorer. I believe that's what it's called.
Okay.
And then you'll probably see a whole bunch of stuff inside of there. Most of that you can throw away. And that'll include, that's where Internet Explorer, if I recall correctly, that's where it stores all of its cookies and preferences and all kinds of stuff. And what I would do, the trouble is, in that folder, there's also all your bookmarks. And chances are you probably don't want to get rid of your bookmarks, because we like our bookmarks. They're handy.
Yeah.
What I would do is I would take that Internet Explorer folder and just drag it over onto your desktop. You don't necessarily have to throw it away. It just doesn't, if it's not in that particular folder, then it'll start over from scratch. So I would just probably pull that folder off to your desktop and fire up Internet Explorer, and what you should find is it should be starting from a completely clean slate. No bookmarks, no cookies, no nothing. And once you're happy that that's worked, then you can go back into that folder that you moved onto your desktop, and I think there's a folder, I can't remember if it's called Favorites or Bookmarks. I think it's called favorites.htm or something to that effect. If you look around it, it should kind of make sense that this was your bookmarks, your favorites. And you can drag that particular file back into that folder that lives in your system folder preferences. Does that make sense?
Well, it does, and I'll give it a try.
Okay.
All right. Good. Thanks for calling, Mike. Appreciate it. Give it a shot. Jim in Salt Lake City, your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Larry. Hey, thanks for this guest. I really appreciate it.
Sure.
Hey, question. Last night, I was using my iMac G5, the one without the built-in EyeSight camera.
Okay.
Using 10.4.9. And I was trying to update iDVD,
mm-hmm.
and something wasn't right about it. And I thought, okay, I'm just going to delete it all from my external hard drive, my Lacy 500 gigabyte. So I closed all the application. I dragged it to the trash, was going to empty the trash, and it says cannot empty because something's still running. And I thought, well, that's odd. And I thought, that's okay. I'll just restart the computer. Whatever is on will turn off. And then when I restarted it, my Lacy icon is no longer on the desktop.
Okay.
And how do I get that back?
Well, there's let me just backtrack just a little bit. So you had iDVD, and you were dragging a DVD project to the trash, or the actual application?
No, what I was trying to update my DVD. It wasn't working, so I closed out of that application.
Okay.
Went into the external hard drive where I had it saved.
Okay.
And I thought, I'll just start over by throwing it away.
Got it.
And make a brand new one. And then as I tried to throw away, they says you can't because
something's
still running
the
audio. And I thought, well, that's strange. I'll just shut everything down and restart it, and then everything should be turned off. And then I lost the icon.
Got it. So right now what you want to get to is you want to be able to see that Lacy drive show back up on your desktop.
Yes.
Well, the first thing I'm going to have you do is there's a little kind of treasure trove of stuff on the Mac that most Mac users don't even know, or they're afraid to go in there. If you go in your Applications folder, way down at the bottom, you'll find this folder called Utilities.
Okay.
And the utilities is really kind of this undiscovered land of goodies that Apple included, but most of us never touch. And you'll find one in there called Disk Utility. And Disk Utility is pretty handy, and what Disk Utility will do is it will show you any disks that are attached to the Macintosh, whether or not they're mounted or usable. So if your Macintosh can see your LaCie disk, even if it's not readable, if it knows that it's there, it will show up. And then you can use Disk Utility. There's hopefully it'll show up on the left-hand side. There's a kind of a column where it shows you different disks that are attached mm-hmm. to your Mac. Now, if it doesn't show up on that list, then it's likely that there's something going on with the disk itself. Either the disk has developed some kind of a fault or something. Are you in front of your Mac now?
I'm not. I'm at work.
That's okay. I understand. So here's what I would do. First, I would open up Disk Utility and see if that disk shows up.
Okay.
And if it does, you can click on it and you can try and ask Disk Utility to mount the disk. There's a little button right at the top that says mount. There's another one that says eject, things like that. And what it will do is it'll ask the Macintosh to really try and see if you can make this disk available. And hopefully you can.
Okay.
And then if you can, there's another button that'll show up in Disk Utility where you can say check this disk for errors. And I would go ahead and do that right away.
Okay.
Now, if the disk doesn't show up in that left-hand column, I would try investigating some other options, because in that case, it's likely that your disk, for whatever reason, isn't communicating with your Mac. And what you can try is try unplugging the cable. I don't know if it's USB or FireWire. It could be either.
Yeah, I have USB.
You've got USB. So sometimes it's just a matter of unplugging that cable and plugging it into a different port. I know it sounds kind of goofy, but sometimes that works.
You know, I did that.
Okay.
And that didn't do anything.
It didn't do anything. Does this disk, by any chance, have a FireWire port on it as well?
It does. It has a 400 and 800.
Great. I would also dig around in the box that it came with, because they usually include cables for it, and I would try one of the other style of connections, because sometimes when a disk dies, it's just the particular interface that died. So it might just be the USB interface died, and you can try one of those other cables and plug it into one of those mm-hmm. other ports, and you might get lucky and it'll show up.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling, Jim. Appreciate it. Joe Rhodes, our guest here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking Macintosh computers and accessories now with Joe Rhodes, self-employed Macintosh support specialist in Madison, works out of Madison. He's got a great website. And Joe, tell us that website again.
Oh, yeah. It's somewhat vain, actually. It's www.joerhodes.com. And my last name is spelled rhodes.com. And if you go, there should be a link right near the top that says WPR. And that is a blog I set up where I'm going to discuss anything I need to follow up on after today's show. Because, you know, you just can't fit it all in 45 minutes.
Well, that's great. So joerhodes.com, and then just look up there under NPR at the top bar. And you'll
WPR.
Find, or WPR, I'm sorry. WPR, and you'll find it. Don in Madison, let's go to you now. Hi, Don.
Hey, Larry and Joe. How you doing?
Good.
Great, Don.
I got a question about converting VHS tapes to DVD using my PowerBook G4 Mac.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I'm wondering what's available out there. I've looked at some that are digital video converters,
mm-hmm.
and then Mac has a third-party product called iTV, which also records the tapes and then converts them.
Yeah.
Do you have any ideas about that?
Well, what's the goal to do with the material once you have it? Are you going to burn it to DVD so it lasts a little bit longer?
Yeah,
do you have a project
to DVDs,
you want
to... I'm a teacher, so I'd use it in
yeah.
teaching classes.
Okay. Well, the let me ask you this. How old is your PowerBook?
It's probably 4 years old.
Okay, so it should have enough horsepower to do this. Here's the thing. Digital video takes an enormous amount of space.
That's true.
And when you pull it in off of the... What I would probably suggest, and one of my clients does this, she has a little box, and I want to say it's about $200 or $300. I think Sony makes one. I haven't used them myself, so I can't give you a great recommendation on one. I would... You know, search around the web and find out which ones people think are best. But basically what it does is you plug your VCR into one side of this box, and then on the other side of the box we'll have a FireWire port, and you plug that FireWire port into your Mac. Now, assuming that your Mac is running a fairly recent version of Mac OS X and iMovie, what your Mac will do is it will see this just as though it's any other video camera. And so you can fire up iMovie and tell it to start capturing the video, and it will play from your VCR, go through this little box, go over the FireWire cable, and right into your Mac. Once it's in iMovie, you can doctor it in any way you need to, and then you can export it to a program called iDVD, where you can then burn it to a DVD, play it on any normal DVD player at school or at home or what have you. Now, it gets a little tricky because your Mac probably doesn't have that large of a hard drive built into it. So you might consider, you know, you're probably going to have to do this in stages and then maybe push that data off to an external hard drive. And then the other question is, does your Mac have a built-in DVD burner?
It does.
It does. Okay. The one thing that, and this is going to be, it's going to be kind of a time-consuming process no matter what computer you have, but the slower the computer, the longer it will take, because the data that's stored on a DVD has been compressed quite a bit from where it came from originally. So when it comes off that tape, it's actually this huge file, and then your Mac has to go through all these calculations to smoosh it down into something that's going to fit on that nifty little disk. So when you're doing this, you're going to have these stages. Once you have it all, you have to import it, obviously, in real time because you don't want to fast-forward the video while you're importing it. So that takes, you know, 2 hours if you've got a two-hour tape. But then you'll also have, you know, maybe 2 to 4 hours worth of compression, depending upon how fast your Mac is, to get the data ready to burn it to the DVD. But I would go hunting around for, number one, a very good VCR. Which is harder to find than you think these days. And I would look, I know Sony makes one of these little boxes called a digital to analog converter. And if you start Googling around for, and sometimes they're, I think if you Google around for a digital to analog converter and then maybe throw the word video on there, you should get pretty darn close to what you're looking for. And then once you settle on, you see a couple of options that look good. I would then Google around for opinions on those products. There's a webpage I go to called epinions.com, and it's basically people just spouting off about what they feel about any particular product, and chances are this product is on there. You can find out what other people thought about it.
Good tip.
All right.
Yeah, I think that'll work out just fine.
Okay.
Thanks, Don.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for calling. And Amy in Edgerton is next. Hi, Amy.
Hi there.
What can we do for you?
I'm looking for a little guidance. I have a G4 with a 14 gig hard drive to 400 megahertz.
Okay.
And it's still on 851.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but it's pretty stable. And that's why I hesitate to upgrade it, but I'm missing out on all the new toys and stuff.
Yeah, and I imagine more than anything, you're probably missing out on a good web browser. So all the good web browsers, they're not made for Mac OS 9 or earlier.
I can't do the... you know, Mozilla Firefox or anything that's safer and, you know.
And I imagine there's a couple of web pages that just don't look right on the older browsers. I've run into that.
No, and I get shut down now about 20% of the time.
Yeah.
I can't even get in.
Well, here's my thoughts on this. Those G4s will run the most current version of Mac OS X. So that 400 megahertz G4 you have will run Mac OS 10.4, and I think the latest version right now is 10.4.9. But it's not going to be a speed demon. So as long as you're just looking to do email and web browsing, that machine's going to be fine. But you might consider maybe giving it a little bit more horsepower. And one of the things I would do is Mac OS X really likes memory. It works so much better if you can add memory. Now, your computer, because it's a little bit older, the memory's going to be more expensive. So you might want to shop around. There's a website that I use that has really easy to navigate. There's a nice button that says Apple Memory, and you kind of run through the list. You pick out a computer that looks like yours. It's a great website. It's called datamem.com. And more than having a great website, they have great customer service, which I really appreciate.
Ooh, yeah, I like that too.
Yeah, if you call them up, you talk to someone who's actually, you know, here in the United States giving you a hand. I would look there and just find out how much memory is for your computer. With Mac OS X, it's really pretty good to have at least a gigabyte of RAM in there. And I know it sounds like a huge amount because, you know, with Mac OS 8.5, if you had 64 megs, you were living large.
yeah. So
I would shop around for that. And the other thing is, how handy do you feel with a screwdriver?
Oh, very.
scares,
I do maintenance.
That scares people when you're talking about a computer.
I've got one of those shock collar things I can put on my wrist.
I hope you mean anti-static and not a shock collar.
Yeah, anti-shock collar.
You might consider, hard drives are dirt cheap nowadays. You can buy a 80 gig drive for about $50 now. And if you shop around, sometimes they've got discounts on it. And I would consider adding a second hard drive to your Mac instead of trying to install over the top of what you have. And here's why. If you do that, you've got a just-in-case plan. Let's say this goes horribly and you don't like it and you're like, wow, this is awful. I wish I never would have done this. You can always unplug that new hard drive and you still have your old one there. So I'm a big fan of...
I can do that.
Yeah, yeah. You can have a second hard drive in there.
Yeah.
Now, let me just throw this out at you. You've got, you know, some money for RAM. You've got money for hard drive. And Mac OS X is $130. You're starting to get pretty darn close percentage point to the price of, say, a Mac Mini, which has all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So you might want to tally up these dollars and just go, okay, here's the money. Here's the time. Does it make sense? Because you can get a new Mac Mini. I want to say the entry-level one is $599.
Wow.
And it's going to have pretty much everything you want. It's going to have all the iLife stuff. It's going to have, I think they ship with a gigabyte of RAM. So you might want, and you can use your keyboard, your mouse, your monitor. So you don't have to buy all that stuff. You can just buy the Mac Mini. So I'd probably add up the cost of those things and ask yourself, okay, how long is this machine going to last me? And does it make sense to put that money into it?
Yeah, good thought.
Yeah.
Good thought, because I'm also debating, I'm trying to get virtual PC off this thing.
Oh,
just
virtual
for
PC.
The space. Yeah.
Well, here's the other upshot. If you get a Mac Mini, you can get these new programs because they run the Intel chip. You can run Windows at near full speed. And you have a couple options for doing that, and we can get into that soon because that's a whole topic unto itself. But you'll have the option if you do need to run Windows, you can run Windows and OS X on the same machine, and if you buy the right software, you can run it simultaneously. It's pretty
cool.
Yeah,
that'd be nice. I just like opening the stuff I get in emails.
Yeah.
I don't really do anything else these days, but...
Understood.
I get left out a lot.
Understood.
Good luck, Amy.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Amy. Thanks for calling. And let's go to Scott in Toma. Hi, Scott.
Hi there. I'm actually on the road in my cell phone, so clearly I'm not in front of my PC. I mean, my Mac, but let me tell you my situation.
Sure.
I've got a Mac Mini
with
running OS X, and I love it. My issue, though, is that I've got a dial-up connection through FasterMac, and I also like them.
Okay.
The problem is I have these upgrades that Apple has sent me, and some of these things, because it's a dial-up connection, take literally hours.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, like, lots of hours.
Mm.
And I'd like to do the upgrades, but my problem is that FasterMac, I'm assuming, is the one that generates these messages saying, stay connected, yes, no, and you have to click on stay connected to stay with this. Or it'll disconnect me. And as I say, if I'm going to be, committing to 13, 14 plus hours, constantly hitting that button
isn't. You got to wake up in the middle of the night and go press the button.
Exactly. And which I've even considered if I could even, gauge exactly when these things come up, but they don't seem to be like every 15 minutes or every 20 or anything like that. So my question is. Is there any way to break up these big files, or what would you recommend are my choices?
Well, you've got a couple of options. Now, my first thought, and you have to forgive me, I haven't used dial-up in a while, but I've got a lot of folks that do because they have to. It's the only thing available to them. I believe if you go in the application in your Mac called Internet Connect, I think that little box that pops up that asks you if you want to stay connected,
yeah.
I believe that is an option on your Mac.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that it is. Now,
FasterMac
might also have something that does that if it's idle. But if you're downloading something, that's not idle. And I think if you punch around in that Internet Connect application, the other place is if you go in your system preferences, you have that little thing called network.
Yep. Okay, yeah,
and
sure.
And there'll be a section there where your modem is set up, and there's some details in there, too. And it's one of my little pet peeves. I really wish it was all in one spot, but it's in two spots.
Okay.
If you poke around in those two spots, you might be able to find a way to turn that off.
Okay. So now, the internet connect is, tell me again where that's, I'm going to find that?
It's in your applications folder. And it's,
if
you're running Mac OS 10.4, and I think even with 10.3, I think it's purple and it looks like a telephone jack.
Okay. Yep.
So that's one option. But the thing is, these files are a couple hundred megabytes, and that's, staying connected for, any phone call that lasts, 12, 13 hours is unlikely. So here's my other thought, and I don't know how likely this is, but if you can get one of those little USB thumb drives, and you can go, say, to your library, or maybe even at work, or if you've got a friend's house, someone who does have high speed, you can download these Mac OS X updates and put them on your little thumb drive. And you don't need a Macintosh to download them. You can actually do it from a Windows PC.
Mm,
so
okay.
You might have some luck if you were to, say, drive into town where they do have some high speed, maybe at the public library, and download those things and put them on a USB thumb drive and then take them with you. And, you know, run the little software update on your computer and make a note of all the things it's asking for. And then go
and
to Apple.
Wouldn't be connected, yeah.
Yeah, and then go to apple.com/support, and they should have a little area there where you can go to downloads, and then just start typing in the name of the thing you want and look for the thing, download it, and store it on that thumb drive and just take it home with you.
Cool. Okay,
that's
well,
a great
that
idea. Yeah, great. That's a great idea. Thanks, Scott.
Appreciate it a lot, guys.
Yeah. Good luck.
Blake in Waukesha, we'll move to you now. Hi, Blake.
Hi, Joe and Larry.
Hi, Blake.
I've got a question in regard to iMovie. I just bought a iMac 20-inch, which
nice
has iMovie HD 6.03, but I inadvertently transferred my old iMovie 4.01 and made two movie projects. I call them Kenya 1 and Kenya 2, so they're two separate projects. And what I want to do is to blend those into what we could call Kenya 3 and be able to edit them.
Sure. So you want to basically bring those two projects and have them become one project.
Right.
Okay.
And do that in 4.01, or at least that's what they were made in.
Well, here's the thing. Do you still have iMovie 6 on the Mac? Do you have both?
Sure. I've
okay.
got both.
You can actually open up your older iMovie projects in the new version.
Oh, okay.
And one of the things that iMovie 6 does that iMovie 4, I don't believe iMovie 4 did it, is you can have two projects open at the same time, which is kind of nice.
Mm-hmm.
And then you know how you have on the right-hand side, you've got that little area, you've got all your clips?
Right.
You can drag clips from one iMovie project to the other.
Oh, wow.
Now, a couple things. You're not going to get all the fancy transitions in that. You're just going to get the raw clips.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is you're literally going to be copying a big giant file from one part of your hard drive to a big giant file on the other. So when you do that, there's going to be a delay while it copies it from one to the other, because your computer is literally making a duplicate of that.
Mm-hmm.
And they're pretty big files, and it's literally going from one spot onto the other to the other. So your hard drive is doing double duty at that precise moment. So it takes a little bit of time to do that, depending upon how big the clip is. But that's what I would do, is I'd open up an iMovie 6 and then start dragging the clips that you want from one to the other.
Okay.
And if you've got clips that have a lot of,
I've got
a lot of
effects. Transitions and... Ken Burns effect.
Yeah. In that case, what I would do is export the part of Kenya 1 or Kenya 2 that you really like, that you're probably not going to do much editing to, export it to what's called DV, or digital video. That's the raw video format. And just export it, and then it will have all your transitions and all your effects.
Okay.
And then you can go into your new project, and you can pull that file back in, and then it'll be essentially one giant clip, but it'll have all your transitions and goodies built into it.
Okay, so convert both Kenya 1 and Kenya 2 into DV?
Yeah, you could do that, and that way you'll have the transitions and effects from both.
Okay.
And then bring them into a new project in iMovie 6.
But first I would have to convert each project from 4 to 6.0.
Oh, you wouldn't have to. You should be able to export as DV from iMovie 4.
Oh.
And then just start a new project in iMovie 6.
Great. Mm-hmm. Have a good day.
Yeah, right. You too.
You too, Blake. Thank you for calling. Joe and Amory, your turn. Hi, Joe.
Good morning. I have a question. I got Corel Painter 10, and I put it on my PowerBook G4, and it will not let me open it when I'm logged in as administrator. But if I log in on another account, I can open the program.
I see. Does it give you any kind of an error message when you try and launch it?
I guess it's a great big long, and I've sent it to Apple 3 times, and I get no response. And their people don't seem to know what the problem is.
Well, they're probably going to take the line of, well, you know, if it works on another application, clearly your computer's working, so you should call Corel. That's usually what Apple would do.
What I did once is I went into the preferences to accounts, and I put allow user to administer this computer, and then I could open it as administrator, but then when I shut down and restarted, then I couldn't do it again.
That's kind of odd. I have to tell you, I don't know much about Corel Painter. I haven't used it in a number of years and never in a Mac OS X environment.
Okay.
But it sounds as though that whatever account you're trying to use doesn't have the right permissions to grab that application and start running it. And one thing you can try, going back to that happy little folder called Utilities in your Applications folder, I was talking earlier about this program called Disk Utility.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a button on Disk Utility that's got a big button that says Repair Disk mm-hmm. Permissions.
Okay, I've done that twice.
Okay, well, that shoots the easy one. I don't know.
I've reinstalled the program twice.
Yeah. Have you tried calling Corel and asking them for some support?
No, I haven't tried that one yet.
I think they're going to be the people who can solve this because it sounds like it's something specific to the way their application is getting installed on your computer.
Okay.
Because if it will run under some accounts but not under another, that it really sounds like permissions to me, and it sounds like their installer is not doing a good job of setting those up properly. And that's what you're running into. So I would give their tech support a call. And, you know, conceivably, you've paid good money for this program. They should be able to help you.
Okay, great. Thank you for your help.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. Don in Holman, your turn. Hi, Don.
Good morning.
Hi, Don.
Hi. Say, I am a proud owner of an iMac. It's a version, or it's OS 10 version 10.3.9.
Okay.
And I want it to be the meanest... baddest computer on the block.
Power, speed,
that? Computer drag racing.
Well, I get emails from friends that I can't open. I sometimes get on sites and something isn't up to snuff, and I can't use their site. And I want to get my computer up to speed. How do I do that?
You betcha. Well, there's a couple of approaches you could do. Mac OS 10.3 and 10.3.9 is the most recent version of that version of Mac OS 10. It's the most up-to-date. It was a great operating system, but they haven't done a lot with it in the last, I'd say, about a year or two, because they've been focusing on their current version, which is Mac OS 10.4. And later this fall, we're going to get Mac OS 10.5. It just never ends. Apple keeps adding new, exciting stuff to their operating system. And two of the things that have really made a jump between 10.3 and 10.4 is their web browser and their email client. 10.3, the email client, it was pretty good, but it did have some oddities. And the web browser in macOS 10.4 got a lot more compatible. Now, you don't necessarily have to run out and buy macOS 10.4 right now to get some of this stuff solved. One option, do you have a program called Firefox to view the web? Or have you ever heard of that?
No.
Okay. Firefox is a free web browser, and it runs on macOS 10.3 and 10.4. And you can get the most recent version of Firefox. And Firefox, they've got a pretty good chunk of the web browser market, and most pages are going to look fine if you run Firefox. So if you don't really feel like going through all of the effort of an upgrade, especially when there's another one coming down the pike here in just a couple of months, and a pretty exciting one at that, I would try going and get Firefox. And you can get this, there's a website called getfirefox.com. And they make a big, they figure out what kind of computer you have, and they've got a big button right there. Just click here to download. And it's a real easy installation. You just, you know, it pops up on your desktop. You just drag it over to your applications folder. You double click on it and start going. And that will probably get your web pages looking more like what you're expecting.
Okay.
Now, with your email, you said that you're having trouble getting attachments from people.
Yes.
Do you know what kind of attachments they're sending you that are causing you trouble?
Yeah, I think they send from a PC to a Mac, and then I get a blank page with a corner folded over.
Yeah.
And when I try to open it, it says, this program requires PPP.
Requires PPP. I don't know about the PPP part, but my guess is most people on Microsoft Windows, they're usually using Microsoft Office to create documents. So, for example, there's a program called Microsoft PowerPoint that is, I'm wondering if that might be the initials that you're seeing for PowerPoint.
Hmm.
But a lot of times there's Microsoft Word and things like that. And if you don't have those applications, you're going to have some trouble opening up these files. So it might be that you need to look at, if you don't already have it, is a copy of Microsoft Office for the Mac. And the most recent version they have right now is Office 2004. And the first thing you do is you install it, and then you have to go right to Microsoft's website and get all the updates, because there's a bunch. But there, in a little while, we're going to be getting Office 2008. So I would look at those, because that's probably what you're having trouble with attachments.
And thanks very much for calling in. Joe, thank you. Boy, the time flew.
Boy, didn't it, though?
Can you come back and be with us again?
I would love to. This was fun.
Joe Rhodes. Go to his website, joerhodes.com, joerhodes.com, and you'll learn some more. And thank you for being with us today, and thanks for listening. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network.